Hi, I'm John Milius. I'm a screenwriter and director and a gun fanatic. I'm here to tell you a little bit about Dirty Harry's 44 Magnum. Why a 44 Magnum? Well, we all know that, as Harry says,
this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off.
Of course, that's probably not true, and probably wasn't even true at the time, but it seemed like a good idea to me. And beside the fact that I owned a 44 Magnum, and so I wrote it into the script and, you know, made up a lot of stuff about it because it seemed like a good idea. But the 44 Magnum and the idea of using the 44 Magnum was to have somebody actually be very careful about the shooting that he did. Instead of shooting a lot of shots, he shot one very powerful shot, and that was usually to telling effect. The original idea was to have a 4-inch 44 Magnum Model 29, but we couldn't get enough 4-inch 44. They were very hard to find, those guns, at the time. They were not terribly popular. And so to get them, we had to get the 6-inch model. And of course, Clint Eastwood is probably the only person in the world who can wear, because he's so tall and lanky, can wear a 6-inch 44 Magnum and have it not show. However, that isn't exactly what happened either, because only the times when he has to bring it out was it actually there. The rest of the time, the holster is empty. The other thing with the 44 Magnum, having the 6-inch turned out very good because it's bigger and it's longer and it kind of looks neat. And it's become kind of the classic thing. We always think of a 44 Magnum that way now. The gun that's in the museum was given to me by Warner Brothers after doing the first Dirty Harry movie and then the second one, Magnum Force. It's another one of the great stories on display every day at the National Firearms Museum.
Made the big mistake of talking about Eddie Vedder right before we started podcasting. Now we're just going to be doing Eddie Vedder voice throughout this whole fucking thing, I imagine. How could you not? That's not going to be fun for people to listen to.
I was thinking Dinosaur Jr. because every time I open a whiskey bottle or any kind of corked bottle and it makes that thump.
Yeah,
I always think
that's a very satisfying sound.
I always just instantly think of Feel the Pain, you know? And then I feel nothing. Mostly because of the whiskey, though.
That's, I'm going to co-opt that if I ever have to write my memoirs.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a
dynamite title right there.
Yeah, then I feel nothing. Hopefully you, the listener, feel something because it's Baby Island Blow.
Are you doing some of that WB Frog going on here?
Baby Island Blow.
It's about time they bring back the WB Frog. He was a beloved mascot. I don't feel like he lasted long
enough. I think he's considered racist in this day and age, so they can't just do it anymore.
What, I can't make fun of that fucking frog? Fuck that frog. They don't be doing that on white networks as soon as a black network. And the number WB, I like chicken. That's the most racist shit ever. Welcome back, niggers, for the WB.
He was green.
Eh.
There ain't no green people out there.
We know
he's racist, then Kermit Frog is racist, and you know, I don't want to think that. I want the Muppets to be able to keep going on with...
If Kermit's racist, it's only because he's a cracker-ass frog from the swamp.
Actually, I think Miss Piggy might be racist against white people.
Fat white people?
Yeah, you know, not trailer trash women. Miss Piggy's racist caricature.
Not in Indiana. It's disgusting. We don't have any of that.
It's fucking disgusting saying about white people on that Muppet show.
Have you heard what people are saying about white people these days? It's offensive.
It's despicable. Somebody's got to stand up for them.
Speaking of white folks,
that's why we're here. That's why we started the podcast.
It's Baby Oil and Blow. Oh, put on your Hitler Youth haircut. It's time for another wonderful edition.
I feel like that little trend is dying down. It didn't last as long as I feared it was going to. It was like overly manicured, hard part little Hitler Youth haircuts.
Yeah.
It had like a good maybe 12 months in the sun or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's out of here.
Yeah, that's
get out of here with you. It's too hard to maintain a haircut like that. What, are you going to your barber once a week?
Oh,
give
you
me
gotta
a
go.
Break.
I keep...
You live with your parents. You can't afford all those haircuts.
Similar to that style in terms of, you know, length and what you got to do. And that's about a 2.5 week haircut right there.
2.5 weeks? I'm like a once every 9 months.
To keep it
months.
Clean? Well, you got longer
caveman
hair.
Caveman look.
That's what's the nicer thing about
this
it.
This is how a real person looks. Wild. Unkempt. Deal with it, everybody out there. I'm not going
to
fucking
be.
Live by your societal norms.
That.
I don't care if you shotgun me when I'm riding my motorcycle.
Is that a thing? Who's shooting motorcycles?
It's talking at the end of that movie. Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Pulp Fiction? Does that happen in that one?
No, it's different.
I don't know that one either.
That's a chopper, baby.
Who's dead? Zed's dead, baby. But I'm not. I'm Matt O. I'm one host from the show.
Good to have you.
You, sir, are another host.
Yeah.
You are the Marcellus Wallace to my Butch.
Ooh, I wanted you to be the Gimp.
Oh, okay. I'll be the Gimp then. That's fine.
Nice.
But you, sir, you are Nate Adams.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody.
Drink it in, man.
Yeah.
Let them know.
Don't have to bring either of us out because we're not sleeping. We're here ready to fucking
talk some
action movie. This month, we're talking action movies penned by one John Milius. This is our latest theme month.
Milius.
What is best in life? The masculine philosophies of John Milius.
Milius.
So, let's just dig into this right now. Let's get into our rundown of our latest film.
The Rundown.
This week, the rundown's brought to us by Purple Mountains. The band the guy from the Silver Jews just started right before he killed himself.
Oh.
I've been listening to his pre-suicide album a little bit today, and it's a fucking delight, man. It's just really good. It's a shame this band never got to go around and tour. This album's got tracks on it with titles such as All My Happiness Is Gone, Darkness and Cold, She's Making Friends, I'm Turning Stranger.
What? That's a great song title.
I loved being my mother's son.
Oh.
And Maybe I'm the Only One for Me.
Who could have saw it coming, really? You know?
So far, my favorite's Margaritas at the Mall. It's a lot more depressing than that title makes it sound. A lot more depressing.
Drawn up all my findings, and I warn you, they are candid. My everyday begins with reminders I've been stranded on this planet where I've landed, neath this gray as granite sky. A place I wake up blushing. Just drinking margaritas at the mall. That's what this stuff adds up to after all. Magenta, orange, acid green, peacock blue and burgundy. Drinking margaritas at the mall.
We gotta start going and eating at the Cheesecake Factory then.
This rundown is of 1971.
How'd that check clear?
Seminal crime film, Dirty Harry. You know, the estate took care of it.
Oh, okay,
the estate
good,
took
good.
Care of it. Dirty Harry has a runtime of 102 minutes.
102, yeah.
It had a budget of $4 million.
No, more than 100.
It pulled in $36 million.
102.
What
was the budgets again? I was doing math.
$4 million. $4 million.
And it made what?
$36 million.
That's a lot of millions difference.
A lot of people went to see this. A lot of people had strong reactions to it. It was kind of a thing back in the early 70s. Director of this fine film is Don Siegel. He's kind of a titan of the industry. Done things like Escape from Alcatraz.
It's a pretty cool name.
The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's a great one. Two Mules for Sister Sarah. He did a lot of little Clint Eastwood
Coogan's
work
Bluff.
On. Coogan's Bluff. Charlie Varick, that movie that cast Walter Matthau as an action hero. That's a bold idea.
Now listen here, buddy. Calm down or I'm going to punch you in the nose.
Yeah, he gets to sex a woman in that movie. It's a lot of fun. Writers, there's a whole host of writers on this. It was rewritten and rewritten, but the reason we're covering it here is because one of those drafts was written by John Milius, the
but uncredited
of our month here. According to him, he says what's left from his draft into this final film is, quote unquote, a lot of guns and the attitude of Dirty Harry being a cop who is ruthless. I think it's fairly obvious if you look at the rest of my work, God, what parts are mine. The cop being the same as the killer, except he has a badge, and being lonely. I want it to be like Stray Dog. I was thinking in terms of Kurosawa's detective films. A lot of high-minded name dropping there for John Milius' normal gun-toting, jaw-spitting, masculine bullshit.
I tell you what, Nate, if there's one thing that I learned from meeting Paul McCartney.
When did that happen?
The one thing he taught me was it's not polite to name drop.
Also, he says about the things that didn't make it in the movie from his script. Sounds like it might have been a better movie here. He says,
more nudity?
In my script, there's just more outrageous Milius crap where I had the killer in the bus with a flamethrower. I tried to make the guy as outrageous as possible. I had him get a police photographer to take a picture of him with all the kids lined up at the school. He kidnapped something at the school, and they showed the picture to the other police after he's made his demands. He wants a 747 to take him away to a country where he'll be free of police harassment. Terrible things like this. And the children all end up like a graduation picture. And the teacher is saying, what is that object under Andy Robinson? And the cop says, that's a Claymore mine. Teacher asks, what's a Claymore mine? And we hear the voice of Harry say, if he sets it off, they're all spaghetti.
They're all spaghetti western. That's a very specific thing that they cut out, I guess.
I really like to see that scene where the little kids get blown up by Claymore mines.
Yeah.
Damn shame we didn't get it.
But, I also like that he used his name as an adjective.
Yeah, everybody told him, that's too much, John. We can't have Milius doing
Milius
this kind of
crap.
Stuff. So he just also referred to himself in the third person right there. He's a real asshole.
He's doing good.
Stars of this film, of course, Clint Eastwood is playing Harry Callahan, no-nonsense, pro-violent San Francisco cop. He was the man with no name. He was the guy who directed Unforgiven.
He's Dirty Harry. He's got a name in it.
He was the guy who argued with that empty chair and pretended like he was President Obama or whatever.
That was the thing.
Yeah.
I choose not to remember that.
In addition to Eastwood here, not really any big names. We got some character actors throughout here. Probably the biggest roles are Rennie Santoni playing the partner Chico.
You mean Poppy from Seinfeld.
Yeah. He's also Gonzalez in Cobra.
No, just Poppy from Seinfeld.
Andrew Robinson is playing the killer Scorpio. He's a freaked out, perverted hippie killer, and you probably know him from playing Detective Monte in Cobra. There's a lot of guys that went on to be in Cobra from this movie, which is pretty cool.
Mm.
That's about all I got. You know, there's another couple character actors in there as the mayor and whatnot, but when you're dealing in early 70s gritty trash films, I'm not going to start writing down all this
John
research.
Vernon.
What's
the
mayor? John Vernon? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he's like the only actor I knew going into this that wasn't Dirty Harry.
There's him and there's like one other whose name I knew, but I don't remember who that is right now. I'm looking to get through this rundown here so we can go directly into our bullet points.
Oh, okay.
Just start picking apart this
movie. Did you do what the movie was about? Did you do the
Oh, no, I didn't write that
thing?
Shit down. I forgot about that. But Dirty Harry, plot synopsis. Dirty Harry's a cop.
When a madman calling himself the Scorpio Killer menaces the city, tough as nails San Francisco police inspector Harry Callahan is assigned to track down and ferret out the crazed psychopath.
There we go. That's a much better rundown of what this movie's about.
I mean, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Just riffing here, pal.
Very rich baritone voice.
Just riffing.
Worded very well. It's important. But bullet points. Let's get into this fucking movie. Pow, 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 pow.
Pew, pew, pew. I was drinking.
Yeah, so the first bullet point, I think, is one we've done a lot here, but is one that struck me again, is that the opening of the film, I think, is probably my favorite sequence in the film. I think it's probably the most well-made sequence in the film. It really set it off on a just a great little way to kick it off for me. We got a sniper up on a rooftop.
Uh-huh.
There's a chick swimming in a pool. It's a rooftop pool. But, another big building.
But hold your horses.
We're in the heart of San Francisco.
She's not topless.
Yeah, she's not topless, which is lame. He blows her away. We're getting lots of helicopter shots. You know, the bay's out in the distance. Lovely San Francisco.
No, bay's in the pool, son.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of current slang you're throwing around right now very, very confidently. And it's making me uncomfortable.
Spent some time in jail.
But yeah, we got a driving, just percussion-filled 70s soundtrack,
that's
too. A
what
lot of Waka Chicka shit going on.
Bullet point.
Really, just getting me, tapping my toe.
Dig that
bouncing in
fucking
my seat.
Soundtrack,
fucking
dude.
Awesome.
That's the first thing I wrote down.
Feels like you're watching like a film strip in a 1980s elementary school. It's just that
it's
sort of music.
Fucking drums are just
killer.
Fucking crushing it.
Killer. So we're establishing the setting. It's beautiful cinematography here. We're establishing there's a killer on the loose. We get Harry up on the roof. He finds some clues. There's a note left behind. So this is going to be one of those crazy man baits the cops and, you know, is fucking with them stories that we got going on here.
You should never bait the cops.
Right away, yeah.
Or bait in front of the cops.
I think sort of we addressed this last week, but I think this was a first viewing of Dirty Harry for the both of us.
Yeah.
Both Dirty Harry virgins here.
Yeah. Speaking of baiting.
I've seen a scene or two of however many of the sequels here and there on cable throughout my life, but never actually sat down and watched this original one, which kind of has a really good reputation. And at the beginning here, I was like, all right, this is a good movie. I'm going to be into this. I'm liking it.
Yeah, I agree.
Hell yeah.
Like I said, first thing that grabbed me was that soundtrack. Those drums and the weird, like, female, like, whoa! I was like, yo, whoa, what do we got going on here?
Definitely
yeah.
A little bit of that, like a Jackie Treehorn scene and Big Lebowski vibe with those weird vocals going on in the background.
It was a good.
It feels like you're at an orgy or something. It's a good time.
It was a good.
Second thing that really stood out to me is the fucking hot dog scene.
That's the next thing I got.
A great fucking scene.
Yeah. After he gets the K scene and he's like, oh, looks like this girl was shot. Oh, shit, there's a note. He's like, well, better go get a hot dog.
Time for me to go to the local hot dog stand.
Dirty Harry's
I've got a
hungry.
Real rapport with the local hot dog slingers.
Harry's got a hankering for a hot dog.
So he rolls into this fucking little diner or whatever, and he's like, hey, is there still a whatever car parked behind me?
Hey, Gino.
Take a peek out the window. I think they might be robbing a bank.
Don't be obvious. Take a look.
Like, and then the old man's like, I can't figure it out. He's like, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to turn around and look myself.
From his walk to this hot dog stand, he's like, that car shouldn't be there. They're probably robbing a bank. What do you know? It's true. The bank robbery's happening.
He checked every rooftop in San Francisco and found a bullet casing, all right?
Okay.
If he's able to do that, of course he can figure out in 5 seconds which cars are robbing banks.
Yeah, very true. This is like basically the opposite of the stakeout scene in Point Break, where they're like, they know the bank's going to be robbed.
Yeah.
They're sitting there waiting for it to be robbed, and they let a fucking meatball sandwich distraction completely have them miss the fact that the bank is being fucking robbed in front of their faces.
But that's also necessary, though. You have to.
Oh, I'm not dissing that scene at all.
Okay,
it's one of the best scenes
good.
In it's based in character, too. Yeah. If anybody's going
you're not getting a dog thrown
do terrible
at you.
Police work because of a meatball sandwich, it's fucking Gary Busey. Of course it is.
You ain't getting a dog thrown at you unless there's a meatball
but
sandwich.
But that's not happening here because fucking old Harry Callahan goes out into the street and starts blowing the heads off of bad guys while still eating his hot dog.
That's the
still
best
fucking
part.
Chewing. And I'm just like, how can it's hot dogs are so phallic, it's almost impossible to look like a badass while eating a hot dog. It just seems like you're sucking a dick. But man, Clint Eastwood pulls it off.
Yeah.
I was on board 100%.
Yeah, he was killing it.
Makes me want to see Clint Eastwood suck a dick. I'm like, I wonder how cool he would look.
Bet he'd look cool sucking dick.
Super fucking cool.
Utah, give me two.
I also want to give major credit to Mr. Eastwood. I'm going to assume it was, his touch.
Call me Clint.
Because I never saw ketchup on that hot dog.
Oh, okay.
I just saw pickle spear and some mustard.
Ooh.
You know, it was a little washed out. Could have been like some onion on there.
It had to have been some onion on there.
It looked close
to a Chicago dog.
Very sensible hot dog toppings. So, yeah. You're not going to slosh around all that sickly sweet bun soaking ketchup all over that fucking thing, ruining your hot dog experience.
12-year-old girls and New Yorkers. That's the only time it's allowed.
Get them out of my face.
So he shoots a bunch of people and he says one of the coolest lines ever written. Mm-hmm. It's the whole...
Now, I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots? Or was it only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, it would blow your head clean off. You have to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
So that's basically what this movie is remembered for right there. And it comes back in the end, so I think it was used well. It was established as a thing. I can see why it caught on as a catchphrase.
It was pretty cool. Like, it was a pretty cool thing.
In addition to him being pretty cool, though, and being able to deliver a catchphrase, my next big bullet point here is the big thing that gets established is that, man, Harry Callahan's a fucking cocksucker. Like, this guy's a piece of shit.
He's got really big hair, cool sunglasses, dresses like a librarian.
He gets a new partner. And instantly he starts complaining that the guy has a college education.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're getting some fucking real, like,
buddy,
conservative moron shit dribbling in here.
I worked in a jail, and anytime somebody was college educated, it was like, ooh, la-di-da, Mr. Frenchman.
This guy's going down.
With this garage.
He went to college.
You know?
And it was as soon as I started hearing this college shit, I was like, ooh, this isn't good. We're establishing some real... right-wing nonsense here. Where's the casual racism gonna... And before I could get the thought out, oop, here came the casual racism. We're throwing around words like spick. It's,
Well, the fat guy, like...
It's not exactly a meet cute between Harry and his new partner, Chico, who's
the fat,
both a brown man and has gone to college. Two things which we hate, apparently.
Right. The fat cop gives a rundown
of
every...
Oh, you mean fatso?
Yeah. He gives a rundown of every racial epithet that's available.
Sure, yeah.
And then, Poppy's like, well, what do you think about Mexicans? And then that's when he reiterates.
They make a real point to be like, this is Harry. He hates everyone equally, so he's not a racist. That's just such a hilarious thing that you hear racists say all the time.
I like, swear I've heard the Wolfman
I'm
say
I'm only
that.
Made out of hate, so it's cool.
But let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. Mr. Callahan's playing in to his character.
That's right.
Because he doesn't want Chico to know...
Okay. How,
well, first of all, the guy's name's fucking Chico, which isn't really a cool out of the gate
yeah,
there.
Yeah, kind
of
makes me. That's not really his name, is it? That's just what Harry calls him, right?
No, that's like he's introduced. I do believe as Chico.
I think it's just the same way that Jesse the Body Ventura would always call Tito Santana Chico Santana. Like, I think we got the same thing going on here.
Jesse the Body Ventura, welcome back to the Bay Area.
Well, you know what? This is going to be truly indeed a sad day for old Chico from Tijuana.
Well, he's from Tecula, Mexico.
Well, that's a suburb of Tijuana. Who cares, you know? You ever been down there? You ever faced Chico's revenge when he'd sell you one of them tacos? Wow, 24 hours later, you pay for it, mean Gene.
Along with a little Mexican tap water, yes, I get it.
Let me say this to you, Chico. It's going to be a double loss to you. Number one, after I whip you for your intercontinental title, you're facing a lawsuit from me, my man, for coming out on national television and lying to all the people in the Bay Area, telling them Jesse the Body Ventura hit you with brass knuckles, Chico Santana, the last time in that tag match when me and the Macho Man slapped you and that Pedro Morales from here all the way to San Jose. When they were done, they even asked us. They didn't know the way to San Jose.
I got that the first time, Jesse.
Because we knocked them out. Chico, all you got was a fist sandwich. And what you gonna say this time? What will the excuse be this time, Chico, when Jesse the Body lays the big fist right in the chops and you're down for the 10 count? You not only lose the Intercontinental title, but you lose all that money when I take you to court, Chico, for lying, for slander, for doing what you did to me, saying I hit you with a foreign object. How atrocious would it be?
All right, I thank you, Jesse Ventura.
That insults my integrity.
Come on,
and
I
you know I got it. See, I'm gonna be the fan.
I could have sworn that's how they addressed him.
I mean, I think they did.
And he was like, okay with it.
I'm just saying it's racist all the way through. Yeah. It's racist on the writer's parts. It's racist on the character's parts.
It was 71. God bless them, though, to make a Hispanic dude the actual, you know.
Yeah, that's true. He turned out to be a good guy.
Supporting actor.
Not a liability, even though he is college educated.
Right.
He proved to be pretty adept at being a cop. But one of the things this movie gets right is that even though they're setting Harry up as this gruff, hard-to-like, pretty racist, pretty prejudiced against the intellectual class dude, is that the bad guy, the Scorpio Killer, gets established as such a wiener little femme pussy that you just hate this guy so much. And you're like, well, the bully inside of me is coming out now. I want to push this guy around. I want to teach him a lesson. So when Harry does this,
push you around.
I'm still going to be on his side. There's no way I'm being on this long hair's side.
Yes, Nate will.
That's for sure.
Yes, Nate will.
He's a weird pervert. He's doing like S&M stuff. He's looking at little kids. He's doing a lot of crying. And he gets hurt and he starts crying throughout this movie. Mm. This guy sucks, the Scorpio Killer. And I didn't really know this actor who played him, but I think he did a real good job just being like a...
He was in
every right-wing guy's nightmare of what like little gay bitches hippies are. Like, he really personified it well.
He's in Charlie Varick.
I know I've seen things he's in. I looked at his credentials. And just, I never have noticed him or been like, oh, that's that guy from that.
Yeah, no, same thing.
He's a pretty generic face.
Weird face.
Performance stands out in this one.
Weird pie-faced man.
This had been one of the first things I saw him, and I think they would have carried through that other stuff. And I've been like, oh, that's the weirdo Scorpio Killer from Dirty Harry.
Yeah, he's a real creep and a half.
I think
he
steals the movie.
He does. He's a creepy little bastard.
CLB.
And it just sticks, like, the whole time. And like in his head, he's like, I'm not a bad guy, I'm a good guy.
He's pretty bad at being a sniper though, because that second time he's on a roof trying to kill people, there's a literal police chopper tracking him, and he doesn't realize it. And like, it's just this loud police chopper directly above him, and he's just still like trying to shoot at people.
Hey, you there.
They full on have
stop
to get
shooting
out of
people from the roof.
We see that you're shooting people, quit it.
Yeah.
And then we get a chase sequence here. This is he's down through the stairs, going through the building. Police chopper knows what building he's in.
Yep.
Somehow he gets away here.
He does.
Seemed weird to me. They don't really like show how he gets away.
Well, he just goes back into the building, and then they jump to the next scene.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and
it's like, well, we
Eastwood's
were pretty incompetent.
Like,
we knew what building he was in.
Yeah,
but he got out somehow.
Eastwood's like, you were outside of the building and never saw him come out of it. It's like, oh, looks like Chico and I got to do everything.
Yeah, so now Chico and him have to do some detective work.
They're driving this is one of my next bullet points.
Yeah.
It's this scene right here.
Sure.
Because they're driving around at night, just like, all they
Harry's
know.
Harry's driving. He's not letting Chico drive. That's for damn sure.
He's like, we know two things. Dude's got kind of longish blonde hair, and he's got a tan suitcase.
Yeah, and that's...
Well, and they weren't even like certain about the tan suitcase. They're like, I'm pretty sure he's got a tan
this
suitcase.
This is a question I had, and I think you're backing up what my thoughts were right now. I was just like, for the next step of this movie, the next way we're pushing this plot forward a little bit is they're just going to drive around and look for him aimlessly, like just circle blocks looking for a guy that matches. That's not very good police work. This isn't very good, very interesting detective story we're building right here.
It's not even what I was getting at, but now that you mention it, that's a great point.
Yeah. our two hero detectives now are just doing loops around the block, keeping an eye out, and that's how this plot's developing right now.
The thing I wanted to bring up was... Two of my favorite lines come in the following scenes here.
I think I've got one of these bullet points.
First one is when he's driving past and he almost hits a couple. And he's like, get out of the road, you hammerhead. Who calls people hammerhead?
And screams at them. They're going through a crosswalk. Yeah. Which he is rolling through. Yeah. And this is just...
out of the way, you hammerhead.
Leading into this whole establishing him as a fucking cocksucker. Like almost running down a clean-cut, just a respectable-looking couple. Then screaming at them angry. I'm fucking loving this guy. Then the next big plot point. Ooh, we see a tan suitcase over there.
Wait, they think.
It might be a...
Well, Chico thinks he sees it. And Clint's like, I never saw it in the first place.
Sure, so let's
but
just...
they go on the chase.
Follow this guy down a dark alley here. Yeah. I'll go down this end of the alley. You go down the other. Eventually, we'll probably meet him, whatever. Then Clint Eastwood gets distracted by a fat girl getting her titties out.
Well, as we come to find out to be... Hot Mary and her boyfriend.
That's right, yeah.
So he's peeking in the windows there. He's like,
I've got a couple questions about this.
Well, because he sees a guy with a suitcase, and he follows him towards the house, and he looks in, and he's like, yeah, that's the son of a bitch with a suitcase. But then it's just Hot Mary and her boyfriend, and her big old jugs come out. And
he
gets so boned up, his boner pushes him off of the brick wall, just enough to lose his footing on the trash can, or at least that's how I perceived it.
I thought those four guys who came out of nowhere in the alley pulled him down off the trash can and then started beating the crap out of him.
No, I thought he just fell, and then they started beating the crap out of him before.
Either way.
Should we get to the line or no?
Just do the line here.
Okay,
and then I'll give my questions about what's going on
here. The old man pulls him down and kicks him in the gut and goes, goddamn pie hawker!
I have no idea what that means.
It's like bird dogging, but you're specifically hawking the pie. You're looking for the vagine, you know?
Hawking is looking at. Okay.
Yeah. So, goddamn pie hawker.
So my first question about this is, this woman, this overweight woman is known as Hot Mary.
Correct.
To all these men. So how ugly are the other women who live on this block that this is fucking Hot Mary?
It could have been one of those like transient, you know, welfare blocks.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have been.
Where it's just like, yeah, she's got most of her original teeth, you know.
And second of all, my question is, apparently Hot Mary and her boyfriend are having sex with the shades not drawn so often that the community has become concerned about peepers, and they're vigilant, and they're ready for... This seems like something that's happened again.
Yeah, well, everybody's...
happened many times, so now they're ready for people to be peeping in on Hot Mary and her
everybody
boyfriend.
Has rights, Nate. That was the moral of this movie.
The neighborhood watch here is formed around...
Everyone has rights.
Stopping people from watching Hot Mary and her boyfriend bone, but, I mean, they're doing it with the shades open, so it seems to me like they want to be watched.
No, I think they would have made it clear to their friends in the community, like... Mm-hmm. If people watch, that's okay.
Okay.
But I think they're just like, you know what,
I think there's some misunderstanding going on
here. I like to leave the...
I can't tell whose kinks are what in this scene.
Don't kink shame.
I'm not going to. I'm just trying to figure out who is kink shaming here and who needs to just chill.
Look, Hot Mary knows she's hot and she's got standards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She knows what she's into. She doesn't want no goddamn pie hawker peeking into her window.
Or doesn't she? I don't know. She did look... pretty annoyed when she saw the racket going on. She shut her window pretty quickly.
How many times they went out of the way to show her chubby hangers?
You need to get those things in the movie. If you got them out and you got a camera, you need to get those things in the movie.
They appeared in the windows three different times. Like, and there was only two different
windows.
Who edited
this movie? Can we send him a edible arrangement?
If he's still alive,
let's look that up.
A bouquet of edible panties arrangement? Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I hope somebody would send me.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's got to be. What do we got next? Next is the old Clint Eastwood directed scene.
Oh, well, I didn't read any trivia on this.
Yeah.
Clint's getting behind the camera all the way here in 1971.
After he gets jumped by that gang and Chico has his back. Mm-hmm. Oh, we should point that out because Chico does come to his rescue.
That's right.
And that's the first time that Dirty...
he's really getting the shit kicked out of him.
Dirty Harry's like, maybe you're not a bad dude.
Hey,
maybe
Chico,
you're okay.
I don't like the fact that you have learning. I don't like the fact that you look different from me, but...
you're all right with me.
I like you because I'm no longer getting beaten by these street trash.
And sometimes that's, you know, name of the game.
That's how our friendship started.
I know you got my back.
I was getting beat up by street trash and you came along and broke it up.
That's right. You're like, you look a little different than I do, but I respect you. So, from here, they get a call about a jumper.
Well, they think it might be the sniper, but it turns out it's a guy committing suicide.
Oh, that's right.
That's
yeah,
why
yeah,
they
yeah.
called homicide detective fucking Harry in here. So, This is
old Homicide Harry.
This feels like a scene very similar to the scene in Lethal Weapon, where Riggs, the most suicidal, dark, out of control cop on the force, is the one who ends up having to talk down a jumper. It seems like they bit this a little bit from Dirty Harry, because we get Dirty Harry up on some sort of lift, and he's up there trying to talk to the guy.
It's an old hook and ladder fireman's basket.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as somebody who's in the lift game these days...
You got any of these old antiques hanging around the warehouse?
Good Jesus, did that look terrifying.
It definitely did not look safe.
And the thing is, a little behind-the-scenes magic on this.
This is perfect.
They go six stories up for this, right? Mm-hmm. It's really Clint Eastwood in that basket.
Yeah.
He did all of his own stunts in this movie.
Mm, what a guy.
He directed this shot.
Kind of like his Italian movies had like popped off, but he was doing Italian movies, of course, because like he wasn't much of a fucking thing. And so this might be like the first role he's getting like in a fucking American studio system film. So like he's not like Clint Eastwood yet, where he can like fucking, you know, hi-hat these guys. He's going to be out there trying to make his bones, do his stunts.
This was like his first big action movie stateside after all those, because I think he directed and did Play Misty for Me right before this.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not hugely action-based, obviously. So he's like, their problem was with shooting this was the director was like, I don't know how the fuck we're going to get like me and a camera and this and that. Mm-hmm. And Clint Eastwood was like, I can do it. Just get me a camera and get me an actor and I'll just get up there and I'll knock it out in six nights.
Right.
Originally the studio gave him six nights to get the shot done. He's like,
this is starting to sound like a biblical story.
He goes, I can get it done in two, and then proceeds to get the whole thing done in one night.
Ah, fuck, that's why people keep letting him direct fucking movies.
So
on time and under budget.
In real life and in the film, Mr. Eastwood takes a old hook and ladder, wobbly basket, no harness, just him, six stories up, to talk to this crazy guy. And he's like, hey, I don't care if you jump, but just, don't pull me with you.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Messy.
Uh-huh.
He's like,
I've seen that happen.
He's like, I'm just up here to get your name and your address so we can identify you, because there's so much blood. Even if we find your ID, it's going to be hard to read.
He's not very good at crisis de-escalation.
No.
That's what's happening here.
But it's cool.
It is
pretty cool.
The
guy's like, I'm going to be sick. I'm losing my lunch. And he's like, oh, don't throw up
this
on
guy,
the...
I know he's like in a bad place right now. He's up there. He's trying to kill himself. But also, like, what a fucking pussy.
Yeah.
This guy, he's getting dizzy. He's going to puke. He's like about to cry.
Yeah, he goes, don't puke on the fire, chief.
Get this fucking pussy out of here. We got to move this movie along.
Yeah, he's like, don't do it. And he's like, oh, you son of a bitch. And he jumps onto the basket.
Yeah, which is just scary looking, because this thing does not look sturdy. This guy's kind of overweight. Now we got two people on this thing. It's rattling back and forth.
And that's just Eastwood holding him up there. I don't know if he's wired to something or not.
Who's to say?
And then, like, the guy's like, oh, I'm scared because I'm dangling. And Clint Eastwood's like, I'm going to punch you in the face, and then you'll stop moving. And I just really like that scene.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that's how it ends. He kind of just knocks him out and then
and
holds on to him while the basket gets lowered.
So he's a real hero.
He's
a moral.
Absolutely.
Of the story.
This rolls on. We get like they get a tip that the killer's probably going to shoot a priest at like a church next. So they're staking out this church ready for it. And this is where some more photography shit started striking me, because we're doing a lot of natural lighting shit here in these nighttime sequences. So we're getting tons of inky blacks. Like everything's just disappearing on the screen, which I think during this stakeout scene was really cool, because they got that rotating Jesus Saves neon sign behind him.
That fucker pops.
It looks real cool just visually. But then also we got the deal where like they're on opposite roofs of the killer. So Harry's got Chico keeps popping the spotlight on him. Yeah. So we're doing a lot of cool shit of just like, killer disappears, then we find him like cat and mouse, just like as a whole little action thing. It works out there, and I'm really just digging what they do with these inky blacks. But then later on a little bit, we get that scene where Harry's a bag man and he's got to drop off money for the killer.
Oh, this
he's
is a really
got him going from
cool scene.
Payphone to payphone, and here a little bit it was. I think it didn't work out as well, because everything was still really dark. It was still the night, and I couldn't like just. Characters were just disappearing. You couldn't tell, like, visual. It was like a distance thing because he had to keep making it to the next payphone in time, but like you couldn't really tell how far away the payphone is because everything's just too dark. And
visually, yeah, that the scene before, like you were talking about with the Jesus sign, like that's just perfectly shot. Like everything about it.
That and the
even when
scene.
Like even when the dude's like shooting out the Jesus save sign above them because that's all he can clearly see. He shoots out their police light and then just starts like lighten up that Jesus save sign because he knows it's above their head and it's going to be enough of a distraction. And he's just like giggling like a madman while he does it.
Which at this point, we are getting so many rooftop scenes, so much aerial photography from like helicopters and shit. We got this manic, giggling, long-haired guy. And I'm just like, this is a fucking Batman movie we're watching. Like,
pretty much, yeah.
Just like plot construction, like how you would make it, how you would approach it. Like, this is a fucking Batman movie.
Yeah, so they're like ducking for cover and sparks are falling overhead. Really fucking cool looking. But the next scene, the payphone scene, like you said, not as
Killer
easy to
gets
see.
Gets away again. He starts fucking with the cops more. Now he's demanding a payoff.
Yeah.
So they send Harry to be the bag man. Right. We get a whole situation where he's like fucking with him. Like,
we've
I'm going to kill this girl that I've kidnapped.
We've also come to learn that he's Dirty Harry because they always stick him with the dirty jobs no one wants to do.
And this is where Chico starts to Harry a little
bit. He's not really a dick or a racist.
He realizes, like, well, this guy is a dick and a racist, but he's also getting fucked around with by the suits on the top, man.
Right.
They're putting him in a lot of bad situations. I got to help my brother out on this one.
So he's like, all right, I'll go in there alone and just give this guy money and hope to save the day and find out where this kidnapped 14-year-old girl is.
Scotch tape a switchblade to my ankle because I'm not supposed to have any weapons on
Good old-fashioned pig sticker, to which the chief is like, it's a shame that a cop has to know how to use one of those.
Yeah, no, it's not a shame at all. It's fucking cool. Every cop should know how to use
a
switchblade.
He's like,
are
you kidding me? I'm a badass. You see this tucked into my dress sock?
This sequence was totally, totally ripped off in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Like, this is all the shit of Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson.
It's like a majority of Die Hard
3. Running around from payphone to payphone in the first act all throughout downtown New York here. Except that's during the light of day. This is at nighttime. Yeah. And I think it's cool in both movies. I like this whole concept.
Yeah, I'm
realizing
it suffers,
throughout this thing how much shit has been taken from Dirty Harry and put in other movies that I've been watching my whole life.
Yeah, if you just want to talk about that now, like this movie pretty much laid the groundwork for like every action movie that we came to see. Like, no wonder like dads and uncles were like, you got to see Dirty Harry.
Right.
Like, what are you watching? That's bullshit. You want to see movie? You see Dirty Harry.
And also, there's a lot of fetishing that 44 that he carries
the old Magnum.
Old men like to talk about. Yeah. This movie really tricked old men into talking about that particular gun and how great it is.
It did not trick people.
No,
it was a real deal.
No, I don't mean that necessarily. I just mean it sold people on it because everybody was buying this fucking gun.
No, legitimately, like in my days working in the jail and speaking with, I worked like when I was at the work release, which was more minimum security, I worked with a lot of retired cops.
All those old timers.
And they were all cops around like the time, like in the early 70s after Dirty Harry came out. And a good majority of them carried that gun because Dirty fucking Harry carried it.
Big fucking gun.
And it was just, it was like swinging your dick around, just be like, you see what the fuck I carry, bro? Yeah. Like, don't fuck with me.
This really just established, I think, more than anything else, that template of like the gruff, no-nonsense cop who's at odds with the system and like does things his own way. Really, like, it gets perfected later when they realize like this guy should have some sort of partner to play off of who has like a wildly different personality than him. Then we get the whole buddy cop dynamic that takes that to a new level. But I feel like we ain't getting that shit until we have Dirty Harry coming in.
Yeah.
Just establishing that shit right there.
Ooh, it's that new show about the policeman who solves crimes in his spare time.
Crank it, Homer.
You busted up that crack house pretty bad, McGonagall. Did you really have to break so much furniture?
You tell me, Chief. You had a pretty good view from behind your desk.
McGonagall. Eases the pain.
You're off the case, McGonagall.
You're off your case, Chief.
What does that mean exactly?
It means he gets results, you stupid chief!
So we go through the big phone chase to make sure that the girl lives and he gets the money.
Yeah,
and this
he's got
and
a tracker on him, so like Chico's able to follow him in the distance, even though the bad guy Scorpio's like, if I see anybody following around, you fucking this girl I got kidnapped's gonna bite it. She's gonna die.
Luckily, Dirty Harry plays by his own rules and just knows a guy on the streets that sells surveillance
That's shit.
And he's like, give me a little wire so that Chico can hear me. And so they get that, and he's running through. And this scene would have been a lot cooler if it was lit better, like you said. Like,
if there was more of a ticking clock element, we were more aware of the distance he needed to cover.
It's not always as obvious just because you lose a lot of stuff.
We get some cool shit, though, where, like, some punks try to, like, rob him on the way there, so he gets to like pistol whip the punks.
Yeah, he has to run through like a dirty tunnel, and like instead of just being like, oh fuck, bad guys, he's just like, guys, I don't have time for this.
Dumb old man answers one of the phones when he scream at him, don't answer that phone!
You dumb old man. So finally he gets to the last phone and he's like, he barely makes it because the old man grabs it, and the bad guy's like, well, I tell you what, meet me at the cross and Mount David's.
That's right.
Mount Davidson.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we'll conduct business there. So he runs there, and this might be the darkest of the shots. not necessarily, because the cross is lit up. I think the one where he goes to the tunnel might have been the darkest. But either way, he gets there, and he's, like, at the entrance of the park, and he's, like, whispering into his little wire, like, hey, Chico, I'm at this street entrance for the park. You know, I'm going in.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's looking around. And, bam, bad dude gets a drop on him. He's like, hey, drop the bag.
That's right.
Lift your hands.
Let's get rid of that gigantic 6-inch barreled gun you're carrying around.
Exactly. And he says, ooh, my, how big your gun is or whatever.
He's thrown in a little gay panic here.
Yeah.
This killer, he's probably a gay too.
Which apparently that line was ad-libbed and had the crew in stitches.
Nice.
And they had to reshoot it, and then we're like, no, leave that in. That's
leave
great.
It in, it's great, but everybody stop snickering.
But seriously, gay? Yeah. So then they're like, you know, he gets the drop on old Harry and he starts kicking the shit out of him, and he's like, you want to know where the girl is? You know, quit fighting back. I'll tell you where the girl is, and keeps kicking the shit out of him, and he's like, oh, no, don't pass out, because I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to tell you I'm going to kill her anyways, you old son of a bitch.
Because I'm fucking a wild card.
I'm a wild card. And then Chico shows up and is like, well, I'm going to shoot you. And he fires at the bad dude, and Harry's like, don't kill him. You know, he didn't say where the girl is. And so they're back at square one.
At this point, I'm like,
Chico gets lit up.
One dead girl, who cares? Let's get rid of this guy.
Chico gets lit up. Dirty Harry sticks the old pig sticker right in his thigh.
Yeah, this is when he's screaming and crying like a little bitch.
He's just like
dying my bag off.
Like that noise he makes when he gets stabbed is so fucking good. And he just rolls away, and then he's like, "Yeah." So now Chico's in the hospital, and Dirty Harry's like, "Well, I ain't got time to bleed.
No,
I got just a few more hours till this girl's dead. I gotta find this dude."
Yeah, we got a countdown to 3 a.m., is it?
Yeah, 3 a.m.
Then somehow we get a tip that the dude's got a room he's staying in a football stadium. I can't quite remember how this came about.
A doctor calls in, or somebody from the hospital calls in, and they're like, hey, you know, we got, because they put out an APB for like a leg stab wound or whatever. And the hospital calls in.
She went to the doctor.
Yeah, they're like,
not a strong move for a crazy killer.
Like, hey man, this guy kind of fits your description. So Harry runs over there all banged up, and the doctor's like, I'm kind of foreign, I don't know that I have time for you. And he's like, you gotta tell me, I need to know.
God damn it, I don't have time for your foreign
and
crap.
The doctor's like, I don't know, I kind of recognize him. And he's like, well, which is it? And he's like, well, I gotta help this other guy. And then he's like, oh no, wait, he lives across the street. That's right,
yeah, at the football stadium.
Yeah. And Dirty Harry's like, great, that's right across the street. I'm just going to fucking go there
keeping this movie short. This works out well for everyone.
So he goes over there, starts ripping through shit, and we get another little chase scene.
Little foot chase, taking shots at each other.
Yeah, a little back and forth until finally they're running down the bleachers. And I love it because, like, Dirty Harry's all beat to shit, and this dude's, like, limping and crap. And this dude great little character actor. I mean, he's selling that leg injury, yeah, like his little hobbled run he's doing. Oh, he's committed, man. It's good. He finally makes it to the football field. Oh, and Dirty Harry's got Fatso with him since Chico's in the hospital. That's right. This is important.
Hey, Fatso!
Yeah, because Fatso flips the lights to the stadium on just in time.
Very cinematic. Now we're getting a last Boy Scout-esque showdown right? on a lit-up football field.
This shot is amazing. Like, old boy's in the middle of the field, and he's still like by the bleachers.
That's right.
But he guns him one, shoots him. Stops him in his tracks.
His leg's pretty blown open at this point.
So he's like, all right.
Open wounds.
He's like, I'm coming to get you. And he starts like stepping on the wound and stuff. And they do this cool like crane shot.
Yeah. Fucking, I feel like just, this was like a helicopter shot.
It might have been, yeah.
So far back. So quick.
They just fucking
from
pull
his foot,
back.
Stepping on the wound to just pull back.
Just
they're on the 50-yard line in the middle of this football stadium.
Arena.
Suddenly, we're just way up in the fucking air. This is definitely my favorite aerial shit
it's
they did.
It's cool, man.
In a movie full of cool aerial photography.
Yeah, it's a cool fucking look. So, old boy's caught dead to rights.
And this is when we start realizing that Harry Callahan, in addition to being a gruff badass, is kind of a dumb fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Because this next scene is just like... Well, they pull the girl out of the drain she was in or whatever, and she's fucking dead as hell. We get some cool, like, full frontal on that dead corpse, though.
Dead bush.
Yeah, some dead bush going on. But then Harry's, like, meeting with all the suits, and they're like, well, you didn't do any of this by the book. You stormed into his house without a warrant. You tortured information out of him, so...
He's pretty much a free man.
Yeah, he's gonna walk, and instead of being like, well, I've been a cop for a lot of years, I know how this goes, he's just like, what? This is all coming as a surprise to me. Like,
can't believe you passed these rules yesterday, and I didn't know.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, Harry, you know what being a police is like. You gotta fucking kill this guy. Like,
yeah.
He's gonna get away, because there's nothing legitimate about any of the evidence against him, or
if you would have just gone full, like, dirty hard ass, like, you could have just killed him and we could have covered that up. We could have made it look like, oh yeah, he pulled a gun on you, you know, he tried to kill you, self-defense, you know, we knew. But yeah,
this is where some of this I feel like probably some Milius touch is coming in here, where we're getting this political shit coming in, where it's like, look at all the red tape these cops have to deal with.
No, I
you
wanted
can't
to...
successfully prosecute any crimes with all the hoops there. And I feel like that's what it was going for, but really the way it was written, it was just like, no, Harry's fucking stupid. Like,
right. Now
he's
this
a dumbass.
This is what I want to talk to you about. Like, I clearly took it just because I knew we were watching it for Milius purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're using his name as an adjective.
That's right.
I knew that we were watching it for those reasons, and I thought to myself, like, oh, this is him being like, yeah, the system's fucking flawed. Like, that's what this means. But the movie kind of touted itself as being, hey, we're kind of turning an eye on the fact that we as human beings have rights no matter what. And we need to start, you know, paying attention to those things and treating people differently.
From what I understood, like, originally it was much more like marketed as like a moral gray type thing, where it was just like, this guy who's the cop is also a psycho, and the guy who's the killer is also a psycho, and we've got fucking psychos on both ends of this. Like, you gotta be kind of an asshole psycho if you wanna be a cop. And then they're dealing with asshole psychos, and they can even, but then, like, once people actually went and saw it and just liked the "Do you feel lucky" punk line, they were just like, forget about all that. And then they just started like pushing it much harder as like a badass tough guy fucking takes down criminals thing.
But like
a little bit of just like a erasing their original intentions going on.
Like I said, like the Milius parts play very conservative, but then the way they tried to spin it feels very liberal.
Mm.
And, Paul Newman was up for this role.
Ooh, I would have liked to see some Randy Newman in here, though.
Yeah, I'm a cop. You gotta stop and do what I say.
Yeah.
I'm gonna shoot you.
So,
Randy Newman starring in the Dirty Harry musical?
Oh, hell yeah.
Buy a ticket to that.
I know what you're thinking to yourself, my man.
Mr. Paul Newman said, yeah, this movie's way too conservative.
Right.
I don't want to do this.
Also, he's way too pretty to be dirty, hairy That's Callahan. Fair. Like, that would not have worked.
But he was like, yeah, this movie's too conservative, but you should talk to Clint Eastwood. Right. He's all about that shit. No, he really did suggest Eastwood for it. So, I don't know. I don't understand which way I'm supposed to think about this movie. But yeah, old girl's dead.
I think it's supposed to be pushing a conservative agenda, but it just kind of like is too
fell
dumb,
into their laps.
Too dumb to do it successfully.
Yeah, to where they could be like, no, everybody's got rights, but like if you feel like badasses too, go see badasses. Right. But like also we care about people. that sounds more
like if
right.
Harry was smarter and like didn't like he just plays shit with such surprise and like it feels like it's
what do you mean?
The writer talking to the audience rather than any legitimate reactions. Cop in that circumstance would have.
Right.
So it just all starts feeling dumb and clunky.
Because again, all the other cops are like, bro, like, what did you think was going to happen?
But the most important thing that comes out of this is Harry did everything wrong procedure-wise. So even though this guy's clearly the killer, he gets away. So what's he going to do? You go to a cool fucking strip club to celebrate. And did you see the set on that blonde when we get that first establishing shot that we're in a strip club?
There was so much to look at.
Hachi Machi, those things were mungo, man.
Those gazungas.
Did we get that kind of just like thick girl just jiggling her butt cheeks for
I was
like
gonna
a
say,
good like 30 seconds
yeah.
there? Is just like some background flavor.
Yeah, she had a big old butt, Betty Nugs above the bar. I said to the little lady as we're watching this movie, man. The early 70s were a really cool fucking time to be alive.
Definitely.
You know, outside of all the racism and, you know,
but for
oppression.
White guys, like, probably pretty cool.
Yes.
At least the strip clubs look like they were a lot better time than they are now.
Like, she was like, and the sexism? I was like, I'm okay with the sexism
just
right
like
here. Yeah.
Pre-cocaine, it seems like strip clubs were a lot more fun to hang out in.
Yeah, cocaine kind of ruined it.
I feel like that's a big part of it.
When it was just drunks having a good time watching a lady shake it about. That's a good fucking point, my man.
The ladies are pretty drunk, too, so they got a lot of, like, booze chub going
just
on their bodies.
Just a drunk chick, not like a
now you get these, like,
methed out whore.
Yeah, methed out fucking. Rail thin strippers
sickening.
Out there.
Oh, we gotta get
no,
our.
No, thank you.
It was time machine back in 1983.
You know those chicks weren't clean shaven either.
Oh no,
so
no,
much
no,
more
no.
to look at. Back
oh,
then.
Everything
so
was
much
there,
more
man.
To look at.
Everything was there. So old boy, he's out and about, and he's like, "Well, I know that Dirty Harry's still following me."
Harry's following him, but he doesn't care. He's just like eyeballing little children and playgrounds and just being a creepy weirdo in general, just sticking it to Harry like, hey, fucker.
Yeah. And he's like, I gotta
can't do nothing.
He's like, I got a great idea to get this honky off my back.
Yeah.
And that's.
This scene's pretty fucking cool.
Let's pay a 6-foot-tall black man to beat the ever-loving shit out of me.
And they really go for it.
Yeah.
This guy takes him into some dirty basement and just beats the hell out of him. He gets his whole $200 worth out of this beating, so then he just starts saying racial shit to him to get some extra fucking cracked ribs and stuff going in. It looks pretty brutal.
They show his face, and like I couldn't tell if he had like prosthetics to make his head look swollen, because like his head already looked swollen.
He starts looking pretty close to fucking Eric Stoltz in The Mask at this point right here. Like,
he
really took a beating.
He also played the doctor in The Mask.
Oh, wow.
So, you
there's some connections right
there.
There
you go. Even Dirty Harry, or Mask ripped off Dirty Harry as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything rips off Dirty Harry. So, Dirty Harry gets in trouble, maybe, kind of?
Yeah.
No?
I think so. He does. He's very publicly... gets all a bunch of news reporters around when he's in the hospital, and he's like, Dirty Harry Callahan did this to me. Cops are harassing me, blah, blah, blah. So then everybody's like, Dirty Harry, you can't be beating the shit out of this guy, and now we're all in hot water.
If you're going to beat him, make sure he ain't white at least. And, they got the most rights.
I think this starts getting pretty interesting right here. It starts going in a different direction than the normal, like, cop and crook movie where you got the crook fucking with them and using the media to make them look bad. And he's really turned the tables on them now.
Yeah.
Now they're on the defensive. But it doesn't get really explored much beyond establishing it.
No, because we're running short on time.
We're running short on time. I think it would have been cooler to get a bigger chunk of the movie like about this. So like them on their heels and not being able to as effectively like police anymore.
If you would have done
so
like a half and half kind of
scrutiny on them now and like anything they do, even if it's like fucking legitimate, people are up in arms and they're protesting the cops and you lean into this whole political thing if we're going to layer it all throughout here and make it like a real plot point. point, but no, we're short on time, so now we just got to get to like the big final showdown.
Yeah, instead of doing all that, like they just for no reason just have the bad guy go to a liquor store. Yeah.
He's like,
just...
I turned the tables on you. Now, like, I can pretend like I'm an upstanding citizen and you're harassing me, but no, instead, I'm just going to do a really high profile fucking killing thing again.
Yeah. Well, he starts it off with real low level, just fucking smash and grab bullshit crime.
It's great.
Where he's just like, hey, aren't you that, liquor store owner that's been robbed a lot lately, right. And he's like, I am indeed
this
good,
is
sir.
Such a great boys being boys scene right here, where he's just like, what happened to your face? And he's just like, you know, my wife's brother, I hit her, and then he hit me several times. And then the fucking liquor store was just like,
I bet that bitch had it coming.
We all hit our wives. That's going to happen in the world.
We all do.
That's great. And he's like, well, I've been robbed, so now I got a big old gun. And he's like putting the gun in the fucking killer's face. Yeah. And he's like, oh, guns are the best. Hope you blow away some fucking scumbag robber someday.
Oh, gee golly wiggers, just not
boys
me, though,
being
buddy.
Boys. But he's suckering him in is what he's doing. He just distracting him. And then as soon as that liquor store owner puts his gun down and thinks that he's got a friend here, pop, he just takes the bottle he was buying and busts it right over this guy's fucking head.
Wallops him in the dome with that bottle of Seagram's 7.
And now he's got a gun again, so he can go out and fucking commit some more gun crimes.
Yeah. Or did he get the gun because he still didn't feel secure enough with what he had already done with Dirty Harry?
Well, I think he was just trying to get a gun because the cops had taken all his fucking guns on that first raid of his place.
But I'm saying, even though he used the media and he used the police against Dirty Harry, he was like, you know what? I'm still
afraid of Dirty Harry because Dirty Harry's tough as fuck he's on my fucking case.
I think there's a little underlying that.
I need a heater, man.
So he gets one. Now he's like, well, I got to get the fuck out of here.
What's next? I think I'll hijack a bus full of elementary school kids.
But this is what I mean. He was panicked. He's like, as long as Dirty Harry's alive, no matter what I do to him, I'm not safe.
Sure.
So he's like, I got to make one last ditch effort. I didn't get the money earlier. Mm-hmm. That got fucked up.
That's right.
I'm going to double it to $200,000 now. And I want a jet. I'm getting the fuck out of Dodge.
Got a whole bus full of children. They're all going to die if you don't give me what I want.
So he does that. He, you know, hijacks a bus full of kids.
Real creepy shit here where he's making the kids sing along with him, like little children's songs. And they're
at
all like
first,
halfway scared, but still trying to sing and be happy so he doesn't slap the shit out of them.
Well, at first it's like they don't know. Only the bus driver knows. And he's like, hey, kids, it's, you know, crazy Uncle Slappy. And they're like, oh, yeah, this guy seems
this
legit.
This guy with the beat the shit face and all the bandages is fun.
And then Maria turned to me and she's like, don't these kids realize like they're a far away from like where they should be going? Like, Don't any of them realize they should be home already?
Little kids are dumb, but one kid finally
figures
it out.
Of course, the fat kid realizes because he was probably hungry.
It's probably Fatso's kid. That should have been a plot point.
He didn't have that.
There might be some cutscenes there where Fatso's son's
Fatso's
on his bus.
Fatso's kid didn't have his after-school linguine yet and was like, I want to go home. And old crazy killer guy's like, well, we're going to the ice cream factory, so just shut the fuck up. And the kid's like, I don't want to go to the ice cream factory. I just want to go home.
Yeah.
And he's like,
that's not realistic.
I'm just going to punch you. I'm going to full-on adult punch you in the face, little kid.
Which he does.
And he does.
And it's great. I love any scene where an adult punches a little child.
And then we get one of the best performances from the killer, and he's just like, stop it! Stop it! I'll kill your mothers! I'll kill you! I'll kill all your mothers! I swear to God! And he just like loses it, and it's like, this is really cool.
You can tell that he means it.
I just like that he's threatening to kill everybody's mom.
But, you know, you don't got to worry about this guy because the SFPD has a plan, and it's for Dirty Harry to jump off of an overpass and land on top of
the
school bus.
That wasn't their plan. No, because he calls in.
Because it's what worked.
He's like, hey, I'm going to call, and I'm going to make my list of demands, and he does, and they're like, we're just going to play this straight. The mayor's like, we ain't fucking around this time. Like, let's just do this straight. And Dirty Harry's like, well, then I'm out. I'm not your fucking bag man.
All the pencil pushers are not dealing with this well.
And then, like you said, we get the coolest.
Dirty Harry goes rogue.
We get the coolest scene ever. Bus driver, the dude's on the bus. He's like, I'm going to fucking make it. And he just sees a figure in the distance standing on the overpass, and it's the coolest fucking shot ever. He's just on, like, an old wooden overpass wearing a nasty
fucking Batman
brown suit. Just like Batman, matching his surroundings, that's right. Just like standing there, not playing, like tipping his cards at all, just like standing there. And the bus gets closer, and old boy knows, like, he's going to do something.
Yeah.
And sure as shit, Dirty Harry jumps onto the bus, and Clint Eastwood really does this, because again, he does all his own stunts, and you get a nice close-up on his face as he's jumping off a fucking overpass onto a passing bus. And
it's just chaos because old boy starts shooting through the roof. The kids are screaming. The bus driver starts driving erratically. This bus is going way too fast with a stuntman on top of it. Like,
oh, there's no stuntman. That's Eastwood. He did all his own stunts.
I don't know that Eastwood could have done the shit after the jump. Like, it's crazy.
It's clearly his face. When he sticks his head over the front of the bus,
where I'm thinking it had to be said, like they're fucking doing donuts in this bus.
It's his face. He sticks his face over the front of the bus in the windshield and debates on just shooting the bad guy through the windshield. And it's just like, I might kill a kid if I do
that.
Some
good bus stuff going on here. Yeah. Like, there's no reason for the bus to be driving this fast. The scene still would have been impressive and fun to watch, but it's going so fast that you're just like, ah, this is crazy. This is crazy.
This is nuts. So finally the bus, what, was it crash or just...
Because they're like crashes, but like not terribly crashes, like crashes into like a...
Just kind of crashes to a
big
stop.
Dirt hill, yeah. And then like they're in some sort of like industrial...
It's like a rock quarry.
Yeah, so... The kids, it's like established the kids are okay and everything, but the bad guy runs out, he limps out, he's hobbling away.
And it's cool.
Harry has to gather himself together.
Because we're running out of time and it's close to the end, but they still manage to, we can't just have him chase him through the street. It's got to be a cool place.
Yeah.
The old boss level, we always like to say.
Yeah.
And it's the rock quarry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's these old wooden
paths. Not quite a steel mill, but it's getting the job done.
Well, it works better because...
You don't get all those sparks in the background. You get in a cool steel mill shootout.
But this works well because they shoot at each other and there's just wood exploding and dust flying everywhere. And it gives it that cool Western look to it.
Eventually, we get a standoff because I think there's a little kid fishing down by like the rock quarry.
Yeah.
So he grabs the little kids, and now he's got one last hostage. And he's got the gun on the kid. Harry's got his gun trained on the bad guy. And then this is when we get the line for the second time.
Well, old boy's got the gun on him, and he's like, you know, I'll kill the fucking kid. I'm nuts. And starts doing that laugh again. And Harry's like, you are crazy. That's true. So he goes to put his gun down. He's like, no, fuck it. I'm crazier. Bam! Shoots him right over the kid. Mm-hmm. He falls backwards. Kid runs off. He makes it over to the bad guy. Bad guy's shot, but he's reaching for his gun, just like the shotgun dude was in the bank robbery scene.
Getting flashbacks to that, where he said, have I shot 5 times or have I shot 6? I'm not sure. And then the fucking bank robber dude was like, I gots to know.
I gots to know. Yeah. But
so then to let him know, he pulls the trigger and it's like, ooh, I was out of bullets. But this time not out of bullets because bad guy gets his fucking head exploded.
He goes for the gun anyways. He goes for it. He was risking it and he bet wrong. House always wins.
He kept telling everybody it was the most powerful handgun and it would explode their head if he shot them with it.
But instead he shot him in the chest.
Yeah, it still exploded his chest.
Yeah.
He got a lot of blood. It was pretty violent.
Falls backwards into the water. He's dead. Dirty Harry stops for a second, looks at his police badge, and he's like, you know what?
Being a cop sucks.
Maybe this isn't for me.
Too many rules.
Throws his badge into the water.
I need to be Batman.
Yeah, throws his badge into the water, and he's like, well, you can end the movie.
Sure.
That's that.
And then it's over. But the problem is the movie made way too much money, so it's like, we're going to do a bunch more movies where he's a cop again.
Yeah.
Just forget about throwing that badge in the water. Right.
So, that's that.
That's that for bullet points here. Everything I wanted to discuss is on the table, so let's take a little break. I'm out of liquids, and we'll let our listeners here hear some coming attractions, and then we'll come back for part 2 of Dirty Harry when it enters Judgment Day.
It was a time, not unlike our own, when brutal danger was a part of life. It was in this time that young Conan was orphaned at the hand of Thulsa Doom. So it became a time for vengeance. But only after his body and his will were shaped by slavery on the wheel of pain could Conan begin his search. First, he had to learn the daring of the thief, the cunning of the fugitive, the bravery of the warrior, the warmth of friendship, the passion of love, and the wisdom of one who has suffered. Only then would Conan understand that revenge is the answer to the riddle of steel. Conan the Barbarian, a film by John Milius.
My knee. Looks like you hurt your head.
He's the one man who stands up for what he believes in.
I can't talk about it. I gotta do something about it.
And the only man tough enough to stand in their way.
Termination with extreme prejudice.
You gotta do a lot better than that, mister.
We are space age high tech, and we get caught by some stone age cowboy.
Nick Nolte is Jack Benteen. Extreme Prejudice.
Now playing at select theaters.
Nathan, don't you go and cut your hair.
We've established that I'm not going to because
that's a really nice hair money. Cut.
I've got just enough money to drink for the rest of the week till my next paycheck comes in.
Hey,
it's coming down to the wire, though.
I saw on your IG, if you guys ain't out there following Nate on the gram, like you should. Classic Nate Adams.
People are looking at my gram.
At Classic Nate Adams.
It's weird.
On the gram.
I met this girl who does Hooters calendar shoots.
Tell me more.
Actually, you met her once.
Oh, I did.
Talked to her a handful of time. Tall blonde girl. So she's like, we should follow each other on Instagram. And I'm like, okay, that's fun. But then I found out she was like my 88th follower. And I was her 50,400 and something follower. So now like, just based on her following me, like I get a bunch of weird, like 5 times more people looking at any like story I post or anything, like people who aren't even following me. And I'm like,
blowing up,
how
bro?
Are all these people looking at this? And I think it's just Russian bots that like follow her and then like get their little tendrils into anything that she does. Just trying to like, you know, get their hooks in and. I don't know how all these algorithms and all
I don't understand. There's all these rumors about
it's nuts.
How it works
you follow out. One Hooters calendar girl and then bingo blammo, you got weirdos all over
Does
the internet.
Does she work at the Hooters we frequent?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, the tall blonde.
That's right.
Oh, she's like a youngerish one.
They're all youngerish ones. It's Hooters.
Yeah, she seems like she's got like the most legit body out of them all, though.
Yeah, she does the calendars and the Miss Hooters pageants.
I didn't
stuff.
Know she did that.
That's why
stuff.
She's got the 50,000 or whatever followers, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just weird. That Instagram's creeping me out a little bit recently. And I fell down a hole of looking at all the comments on all of her pictures, too.
Oh, now see, that's the internet
desperate.
I live for.
They are desperate
that's
and
the
sad.
Internet
and then she
I
was showing
for.
Me these DMs of this guy offering her $700 for pictures of her feet. There's some cool stuff
oh,
going on.
Oh, she did
there.
It, didn't she?
Well, she gave him her Venmo, and then he was like, well, where's the pictures? And she's like, you'll get the pictures when the $700
yeah.
shows up in my Venmo. And then there was no future correspondence. Oh. But it was an ongoing thing. Like, maybe next time I talk to her, there'll be new news.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm fingers crossed. Like, get over yourself. Like, if some weirdo's like, here's $700. Somebody offered me $200 for my feet.
Oh,
I'd be like,
no problem.
Yeah, like,
there's
what do
no
you want?
Problem there.
Polaroids, digitals.
Yeah.
You want to take the picture?
Go down to the fucking boardwalk and have a caricature artist draw a picture of them
Whatever
for
you.
Whatever
you want.
Yeah, anything.
I'm game. We'll go to Six Flags, make a day out of it. They got the drawing things there.
Oh, good.
The caricature things.
I'd also like to eat a churro, so we should just do that.
Let's eat a hot dog and shoot a bank robber and find out. We've already talked about what the internet thinks about Hooters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out what the internet thinks about the dirty Harry Potter.
Okay, that's what's going
Harry
on
Potter?
Here in Judgment
dirty
Day.
Harry.
I thought that, quite frankly, there'd be a lot more crazy you know, reviews of this out there, because this is such a polarizing film. It's violent. It's got some political shit in it. There's a lot of police shooting stuff going on in it, but...
Let's be honest.
Pretty disappointed.
Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The dorks leaving those kinds of reviews,
yeah,
they're not watching this movie.
I think this is a little bit too old school for them. So there was just a ton of generic five-bullet reviews of people just being like,
I bet.
Best movie ever, and very, very few one-bullet reviews anywhere.
I just got on internet yesterday because my grandson came over and set it up for me, and I just want to... The reason I told him to set up my internet
so I could say
this is
Dirty Harry.
This God bless America.
I did find a couple of one bullet reviews here, so we'll start off with them. This first one bullet review is
I'm
from
sitting back.
Letterboxd user Zach Parker. He says,
Zachy P.
Not entirely sure why this one caught on as it did. Probably because of public opinion regarding catching the uncaught Zodiac killer. Don Siegel, like always, only delivers one or two great shots, but misses out on everything else. Very little of this movie is suspenseful because of no damn camera movement. That's an insane opinion right there. The camera's on a helicopter.
That's the stupidest shit. I assume
he keeps the camera static and leaves out contextual information the audience could use to build a scene.
Whatever.
Such as the elapse of time in the phone booth chase, that we have little idea of what's at stake. Nobody shown, no girl, no perspiring mare, no rapid succession of shots and near failures, etc. One bullet from Letterboxd user Zach Parker.
They use that scene in place of the car chase, bro. Like, you're not going to cut to other people that aren't involved in the immediate scene.
I don't know. I kind of agree with him. I would have liked some shots of a perspiring man. This isn't going to be good for my re-election.
I'm the dean in Animal House.
This next one bullet review is from Letterboxd user Pulitzer. Pulitzer gets right to the point here.
That's a ballsy name.
He says, cop-ass movie with a cop-ass sequel. One bullet from Letterboxd user Pulitzer.
I'm torn there, because that name and that review are suggesting two different things
I'm
to
thinking,
me.
No, I'm thinking this is an aspiring rapper.
Okay, all right.
Fucking, he's calling himself Pulitzer, and he hates cops, and he watches a movie, and he's like, fuck this cop-ass movie, I hate this shit.
I hate this cop-ass shit.
I like Pulitzer. I'm going to look him up on SoundCloud.
See what else he's got going.
Now we get into our five bullet reviews. These are people who fucking love Dirty Harry, and they're going to make their case here.
Yeah, these are going to be lengthy.
This first five bullet review is from Amazon user MB Phillips. He says,
MB Shyamalan.
You probably have to be over 50 to really appreciate Dirty Harry.
Nice.
I bought a Model 29 25 years ago just because Clint had one in this movie series. I had big fun over the years with that, and still like to watch the movie too. Great lines, even though it's not the most powerful handgun in the world and wasn't then either. It's still a lot of fun to shoot. Five bullets from Amazon user MB Phillips.
He did one of my favorite things that like older people do, and I'm even guilty of it these days, where like if a younger person likes something that you like from your generation, and you're like, well, you like it, but like you don't understand how good it
is. That's right.
And I like that he led with that.
It's true, because they don't.
He led with that.
This one is a five-bullet review from Amazon user S-Vecchio. S-Vecchio. He says, the last review of this film was written in 2003, and the reviewer spoke at the end of how in the 32 years since this movie was made, it had lost little of its social relevance. Well, it's 2015, and it's been 42 years since the movie was made, and I've probably seen it 10 times easy. How can you ever tire completely of Clint nonchalantly pulling that cannon out of his pocket and single-handedly stopping a bank robbery, still chewing a piece of the hot dog he was eating when it went down? I can recite the I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Speech flawlessly. I have to give this movie 5 stars, and would anyway, but my mother, who has had a crush on Clint for years, would never forgive me if I didn't. She says she likes the way he walks. We watched it today. She's 95. Five bullets from S-Vecchio, whose 95-year-old mother likes the way Clint Eastwood walks.
How old do you think that makes S-Vecchio?
I don't know.
I mean, even if you're giving, like, if you're saying, like, she had him when she was 30.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That still makes him 65.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about what makes my mom Randy in this review of a movie I'm writing on Amazon right here.
You want to know what makes my mom's old pussy wet?
Nothing, because she's 95.
Good God.
Let's get into your final thoughts and your rating, though.
I had a lot of them until
you... I don't
know
if you're going to bring up your mother or not.
I had so much I wanted to talk about until you read that review.
Does Lynn show up in your final thoughts?
No, we're not watching Mr. Baseball here, so...
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we've discussed... Yeah, she loves the Selleck. You're watching that Magnum P.I.
She's of a different generation of Especio's mom.
She's going to want to talk to you at the wedding about Magnum P.I.
It's fine, I got a lot of
so
stuff.
Be ready.
I got a lot of thoughts.
Bring notes. All right, Dirty Hooray. As we already established, this movie actually laid the blueprint for a lot of the action movies that we grew to know and love.
That's absolutely true.
As children's.
And as adults.
Adults as well, yeah. But we underplayed a couple things I want to get back on.
Get
first of all...
Right those wrongs.
That soundtrack.
Oh, so good. I could groove
Do believe that dude is the dude that wrote the Mission Impossible theme song that everybody
fucking
knows.
Classic.
But that the soundtrack in this movie, it reminded me one half Shaft, one half anything that like Goblin did with Argento.
Oh, that's fun.
This movie predates both of those by a lot of years. A lot of years.
Got a seminal track right here. This is a classic 70s sound, but it's in 1971. It's kicking off
right.
a movement.
This is what started it, man. The other thing is the shots, which we talked about a little bit, but the way some of this played out, It hit me a little Hitchcockian. The way he uses San Francisco as a character at times, the way Hitchcock does in like Vertigo.
The focus stuff from looking off of roofs, very similar
Correct.
To like some of the rear window shit where we're peeping on people from our balcony.
There's a couple like different stairwell scenes and like just weird zoom ups and zoom downs that just, I don't know, man, like it's not... just your standard action affair. Like there's some other things going on in this. It's not without its flaws. I mean, the whole, like, is it right wing? Is it left wing? Is it, you know, pro beating people up? Is it pro?
I think it's pro beating people
stopping
up.
People from beating people up.
Yeah.
Who's to say, but I think we both know how that, yeah, where that really lies. But either way, it's not enough to derail it from how good of a movie it is. And it's such a good movie that it is better than just good.
Wow.
And that's why I'm giving it a full 4 bullets.
Full 4 bullets.
It does a lot of things right here, Nathan.
I think that this movie is a victim of me having seen it so late in my development after having seen so many movies that built off of what it established. It feels like a movie that probably would have played as being a lot edgier and smarter back in 1971 when, like, all this shit didn't become played out cliche with the cop who's doing it his own way and the bureaucrats and all that. This stuff just became so standard that you watch it now and you're just like, okay, we're going to sit through the scenes now where the cop argues with the mayor and whatnot. So
sure.
It plays as a little bit more boring to me than it would have if I would have seen it back in the day, if I was alive back then, or if I had seen it younger before I saw all those other things. You get the sense that, like, the killer being so nasty and psychotic, because, like, it feels like that probably shocked people a lot more back in 1971.
Fair.
And we've sat through things like fucking Seven and shit now that just has some real twisted-ass shit in it. It feels pretty tame by comparison, but...
Oh, Buffalo Bill.
This kind of looks like a pretty standard cop and serial killer movie when I watch it through today's eyes, but it's a solid one that's well made by a good director, and for that reason, I'm giving it just a notch above decent. I'm saying it's 3.5 bullets.
Oh,
I think if I would have seen this when I was younger, I could get up there in that 4 bullet range, but my personal opinion is just my honest reaction is all I can give. A little bit ruined for me for having waited this long to see it.
See... I'd go back to my jail sensibilities, and I think you'd catch an ass-whipping right here.
Wow.
Because you don't respect the original gangsters right here.
No, the OGs, get out of here. We're making our own way.
This is a movie right here that set the bar for all the other ones. This is why Schwarzenegger did a True Lies.
I don't know.
He wanted to be an action hero with cool lines. He said it himself.
I think there was so much cocaine going on in the movies, people would become action heroes, even if there was no Dirty Harry.
I mean, that's, you know, also...
Cocaine is what makes the dream work, my
cocaine.
Man.
Cocaine! Being here. That's why Blow still works in the title of our podcast, Baby Oil and Blow.
Speaking of Arnold Schwarzenegger, we're watching a Schwarzenegger movie next week.
Do you gonna, are you going to say what it is? Or
motherfucker.
Not, because we haven't been telling people.
Well, this is...
And people have gotten back to me, like, they like sometimes you got to figure out what it is in the trailers without seeing it, because we just play the audio, and they don't necessarily say the name of the movie.
I wasn't trying to build any mysteries, but maybe that's fun for people. This is fucking Milius written and directed. It's a big one. It's
them.
The fucking thing. It's Conan. Of course you're watching Conan the Barbarian. If you know who John Milius is, you know we're fucking watching Conan.
It's Conan.
Get ready for that.
The Barbarian. I'm just a barbarian. Yeah. It's going to be next week. It's going to be on Baby Oil and Blow. Oh, and you're going to stay single, motherfucker.
It's a long road when you're on your own. And it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. Use a friend.